In 1410, the valley of Urseren was finally joined to Uri, though communications were difficult and carried on only by means of the Stiebendebrück, a wooden bridge suspended by chains over the Reuss. Welcome to the History of Little Europe, Episode 1.11, Entering the World Stage. So, I'm back from my two-week hiatus. I know that's not much in the face of the months I took off earlier this year, but my goal is to run at a more consistent schedule from this point forward. If anything, I may be gearing up the podcast through this summer, as the quarantine situation gives me more time than I know what to do with. We could soon achieve a pace of 2 episodes a week or more, but I'm not making any promises. Last time, we left off with the second Habsburg defeat and the consolidation of the Confederacy into 8 cantons. In this episode, we will watch as the Confederacy rapidly expands in all directions, then nearly collapses under its own weight. The victory at Sempach not only increased the fame of the League, but also enabled it to extend its influence and its territory. The 15th century is the period when both the Confederacy and its several members took to aggressive expansion of their power and lands. The key distinction there being that, while the Confederacy sometimes acted as a single body, in which case conquered territories were incorporated as new members, sometimes individual cantons would conquer territory and annex it directly into their own holdings. The next target of ambition was to continue the pressure the Confederacy had placed on the Habsburgs, which meant expansion eastward. The pastoral highlands of Appenzell and the town of St. Gallen had long been trying to throw off the yoke of the local abbey. The Appenzellers especially had offered a stubborn resistance, defeating the abbot's forces twice, despite Austrian backing. Schweiz had given them some help, and in 1411, Appenzell signed treaties allying them to the Confederacy. The next year, the city of St. Gallen made a similar pact. Between 1416 and 1417, a similar situation played out along the Western Front. Several of the Taithings of the Upper Valais became closely associated with the three forest cantons. It required aid in its final struggle against the House of Savoy, which held the Lower Valais. The forest cantons attempted to conquer the territory outright, but Bern intervened and established a house more loyal to it. The trick with all of this is that while all of these territories are now allied to the Confederacy, it will take many years before they become cantons. Appenzell would take until 1513, St. Gallen until 1803, and the Valais until 1815. The next conquests came when a messy bit of European politics forced the Habsburgs to duke it out with the Emperor over the authority of the Pope. It would take me 10 minutes to describe all of the ups and downs, but the upshot was that the Confederacy was granted a justification to conquer the Habsburg holdings of Aargau, directly west of Zurich. This would be the first time the Confederacy worked together to conquer territories, which would become a common practice. Bern annexed about half of the land, and the other half was brought into the fold of the Confederacy at large, side of a cliff. Yet, this enlargement of territory gave a complete command over the Gotthard Pass. In 1414, they lost this to Savoy, but obtained in 1416 the alliance of the men of the Upper Valais, then fighting for freedom, and thus regained the valley. In 1419, Uri and Obwalden brought from Savoy the town and district of Bellinzona. This rapid advance, however, brought them into conflict with the Duke of Milan, who responded by sending his own forces to occupy all of these lands. When the forest cantons attempted to reclaim the territory, the other members of the Confederacy refused to help them. In the short term, this forced them to recognize Milan's control over their newly acquired territories, but for the Confederacy, it showed how willing the members were to undermine each other. The original contrasts between the social condition of the different members of the League became more strong when the period of conquest began, and with the matter of the Aargau and the Italian conquests began progressing towards civil war. The spark of this particular conflict would be the passing of one Unas of Frederick. Count Frederick's predecessors had greatly extended their domains, so that they controlled the Rhine Valley between Feldkirch and Sargon. He himself had managed to secure his vast possessions by making treaties with several members of the League, particularly Zurich and Schweiz, though he became progressively more in support of Schweiz. The situation progressed further when, in 1411, the men of Unterwalden, exasperated by the insults of the local Savoy lords, called on the other members of the League, and all jointly, except Bern, occupied the Val d'Olsola, on the south side of the Simplon Pass. His death was the signal for the breaking out of strife. Zurich and Schweiz immediately began fighting to claim his territory. After being twice defeated, Zurich was forced in 1440 to buy peace from Schweiz. At this point, the general feeling of the Confederates was opposed to Zurich, enough that several of them went as far as to send men and arms to Schweiz. Zurich, however, was bitterly disappointed at these defeats. They turned to a different authority and forged an alliance with Austria, which now held the imperial throne. Though technically within her rights, according to the terms on which she had joined the League in 1351, this act of Zurich caused civil war to break out immediately, especially when the Habsburg Emperor had been solemnly received and acknowledged in Zurich, undermining the legitimacy of the entire Confederacy. In 1443, the Zurich troops were completely defeated at St. Jakob. Unable to get help elsewhere, Frederick of Habsburg called upon Charles VII of France, who marched into western Switzerland with 30,000 men. This army pillaged much of the countryside until it reached the gates of the free imperial city of Basel. A small Confederate army met them, and although defeated, put up so much resistance that the French forces turned and marched back home. Several small engagements ensued, ending with Zurich being readmitted into the Confederacy, this time under stricter rules. For those of you keeping track of the score, the Confederacy just defeated the Habsburgs so soundly that they had to call on the French, their mortal rivals in the Catholic world, and even still, the Confederates reigned supreme. These fresh proofs of the might of the Confederates and of the growing importance of the League did not fail to produce important results. In 1452, the Confederates of the Old League of Upper Germany, as they styled themselves, made their first treaty of alliance with France, bringing a new player into their diplomatic circles. Around this time, the borderlands of the Confederacy began coalescing into territories allied to the Confederacy, but not yet full members. These included the aforementioned town of St. Gallen and the town of Bienne, who held moderate sway over policy, but were not full cantons. Then came the rank of tributaries, such as the Valais, Schaffhausen, Rothwil, Mulhausen, and would, in the coming century, include Neuchâtel, Geneva, and the Bishop of Basel. Appenzell, too, in 1452, rose up from the rank of a protected district into the class of associates. Outside of this were certain places protected by several members of the League, such as Gerosau, the Abbey of Engelberg, and the town of Rapperswil. These associates to the League were bound to obey orders in declaring war and making alliances, but still maintained a degree of separation. In 1439, Sigismund succeeded his father, Frederick, in the Habsburg lands in Alsace, and being much irritated by the constant encroachments of the Confederates, and in particular by the loss of Rapperswil, declared war against them, but only added to the string of defeats. In 1460, the Confederates overran Thurgau and occupied Sargand. Hence, in 1461, Sigismund had to give up his claims on those lands and renew the peace for 15 years, while in 1467 he sold Winterthur to Zurich. Thus, the whole line of the Rhine was lost by the Habsburgs, further buffering the Confederacy against them. Around the same time, the League had made treaties of friendship with Philip the Good, Duke of Burgundy, and with the Duke of Milan. All of this began to set up the dominoes that would lead, in the end, to the Burgundian War, a great epoch in the history of the League, as it created a common national feeling, enormously raised its military reputation, and brought about the close connection with certain parts of Savoy. As part of his peace deal, Sigismund had to agree to pay a tremendous sum, but did not know where to obtain it, and turned to Charles the Bold, Duke of Burgundy, who was just beginning his career and aiming at restoring the ancient kingdom of Burgundy. For this, Charles wished to marry his daughter and heiress to Maximilian, son of the emperor and first cousin of Sigismund, in order that the emperor might be induced to give him the Burgundian crown. On the 9th of May, 1469, Charles promised to give Sigismund 50,000 florins and agreed to attack the Confederacy in exchange for Habsburg holdings along the Upper Rhine. The Swiss, in these circumstances, began to look towards Louis XI of France, who had confirmed the treaty of friendship made with him by his father in 1452. Sigismund had applied to him early in 1469 to help him in his upcoming campaign, but Louis had point-blank refused. Anxious to secure their neutrality in case of his war with Charles, he made a treaty with them in August 1470. Then, Charles altered the deal. He took the promised lands, but whenever the subject of invading the Confederation was brought up, he stalled or came up with excuses. Charles, on his side, tried to make an alliance with the Swiss. He probably wished to use both Sigismund and the Swiss to further his own interests, but his shifty policy had the effect of alienating both from him. Sigismund, disgusted with Charles, now inclined toward Louis, whose ally he formally became in the summer of 1473. The Confederates, on their side, were greatly moved by the oppression of their friends and allies in Alsace by Hagenbach. Charles's astute policy had thus lost him both Sigismund and the Swiss. They now looked upon Louis, who, thoroughly aware of Charles's ambition, aimed at a masterstroke, the reconciliation of Sigismund and the Swiss. This, on the face of it, seemed impracticable, but common need and Louis's dexterous management brought it to pass, so that on the 3rd of March, 1474, the Everlasting Compact was signed at Constance, by which Sigismund finally renounced all Austrian claims on the lands of the Confederates, and guaranteed them in quiet enjoyment to them. They, on the other hand, agreed to support him if Charles did not give up the mortgaged lands when the money was paid down. Charles was then called on to restore his lands to Sigismund. He, however, took no steps. Within a week, the oppressive bailiff, Hagenbach, was captured, and a month later, he was put to death, though only Bern acted as a representative. On the 8th of October, Sigismund declared war against Charles. The next day, Louis formally ratified his alliance with the Confederates, promising money and pensions, the latter to be increased if he did not send men. Throughout these negotiations and later, the Canton of Bern directed Swiss policy, for it, in particular, was exposed to attack from Charles and Charles's ally, Savoy, and her best chance of extending her territory lay towards the west and south. An offensive policy was thus distinctly the best for Bern, supported by the French army. The forest districts, however, were very suspicious of this movement to the west, by which Bern alone stood to gain. They favored a southern policy, a policy which was crowned with success after the victory at Gyornico in 1478 by a handful of men from Zurich, Luzern, Uri, and Schweiz, over 12,000 Milanese troops. The battle had given Uri a permanent footing south of the Alps, not long before Bern won its first conquests from Savoy. The war in the west had begun by Bern and her allies sending marauding expeditions across the Jura mountain range, in which several towns surrounding Neuchâtel were seized. It is believed that around this time, the iconic White Cross was first used as a Swiss flag. Meanwhile, the Duchess of Savoy had, with fear of her brother Louis XI and hatred of Bern, joined the war. The result, though, was a campaign season where Bernie's troops ran amok in the region, capturing several cities and much of the Vaud region. Meanwhile, the Upper Valais, which had conquered all Lower or Savoy territory, entered into alliance with Bern for the purpose of opposing Savoy and preventing the arrival of Milanese troops. Alarmed at their success, the Emperor and Louis deserted the Confederates. While they had made substantial gains, it now seemed they would be forced to rescind them and dig in for coming invasions. They had entered the war as allies of the Emperor, and now became the leaders of the war against Charles, who secured an alliance with Edward IV of England, received the surrender of Lorraine, and hastened across the Jura to aid his Italian allies. On the 21st of February, Charles laid siege to the castle of Grandson, and after a week's siege, the garrison of Bernese and Freiburgers had to surrender. This force was then massacred, leaving only two in the entire army alive. This hideous news met a large body of Confederates gathered together to relieve the garrison, and traveled to their rendezvous at Neuchâtel, where both the count and town had become allies of Bern in 1406. An advanced body of Bernese, Freiburgers, and Schweitzers amassed and attacked the Burgundian outposts. Charles drew back his force in order to bring down the Swiss to the more level ground where his cavalry could act, but his rear misinterpreted the order, and when the main Swiss force appeared over the ridge of a nearby hill, the Burgundian army was seized with a panic and fled in disorder. The Swiss had gained a glorious victory and regained the conquest of Grandson, besides capturing very rich spoils in Charles's camp. Such was the famous Battle of Grandson. Charles at once retired to Lausanne and set about reorganizing his army. He resolved to advance on Bern by way of Mürten, which was occupied by a Bernese garrison, and laid siege to it. The Confederates had now put away all jealousy of Bern and collected a large army. A decisive battle took place on the afternoon of the 22nd of June, after the arrival of the Zurich contingent under Hans Waldmann. English archers were in Charles's army, while with the Swiss was René, the dispossessed Duke of Lorraine. After facing each other for many hours in the driving rain, a body of Swiss, by outflanking Charles's rear guard, stormed his camp, and the Burgundians were soon hopelessly beaten, the losses on both sides being exceedingly heavy. Vaud was now reoccupied by the Swiss, but Louis now stepped in and procured the restoration of that region to Savoy, in exchange for several cities and Savoy rescinding its claims to Freiburg. Thus, French-speaking districts first became permanently connected with the Confederation, and the war had been won from the maintenance of recent conquests rather than purely in defense of Swiss freedom. Charles tried in vain to raise a third army. René recovered Lorraine, and on the 5th of January, 1477, under the walls of Nancy, Charles's wide-reaching plans were ended by his defeat and death, many Swiss being among René's troops. These victories laid the foundation of Swiss nationality, but soon after them, the long-standing jealousy between the urban and rural centers in the Confederation nearly broke it up. This had previously hindered common action, and was usually overcome only with pressing external issues. In 1370, the Parsons Ordinance, agreed on by all the Confederates except Bern and Glarus, compelled all residents, whether clerics or laymen in the Confederation, who were bound by oath to the Duke of Austria, to swear faith to the Confederation, and this oath was to rank before any other. Further, in 1303, the Sempach Ordinance was accepted by all the Confederates and Solier. This was an attempt to enforce police regulations and to lay down articles of war for the organization and discipline of the Army of the Confederates. But, save these two documents, common action was limited to the meeting of two envoys from each member of the Confederation, the powers of which were greatly limited by the instructions brought by each envoy. The decisions of the majority did not bind the minority, save in the case of affairs of the bailiwicks ruled in common. Thus, everything depended on common agreement and goodwill. But disputes as to the divisions of lands conquered in the Burgundian War and the proposal to admit into the League the towns of Freiburg and Solier caused the two parties to form separate unions. Suspended a moment by the campaigns, these quarrels broke out after the victory of Guernica, and at the Diet of Stans, when it seemed probable that the failure of all attempts to come to an understanding would result in the disruption of the League, the mediation of Nicholas von der Feli, a holy hermit of Saxeln in Obwalden, succeeded in bringing both sides to reason. Both towns had long been allied with Bern, whose influence was greatly increased by their admission. And the third great ordinance of the League, the Compact of Stans, was agreed on. By this, the promise of mutual aid and assistance was renewed, especially when one member attacked another, and stress was laid on the duty of the several governments to maintain the peace, and not to help the subjects of any other member in the case of a rising. The treasures captured in the war would be equally divided not just among the combatants, but the territories and towns amongst the members of the League. As a practical proof of the reconciliation, on the same day the towns of Freiburg and Solier were received as full members of the Confederation. Both of the new members had done much for Bern in the Burgundian War, and it was for their good service that she now procured them this reward, in hopes, perhaps, of aid on other important and critical occasions. The Compact of Stans strengthened the bonds which joined the members of the Confederation. Next time, we will watch as the Habsburg allies the Confederacy has just made look around and find a Swiss Confederacy now more powerful than ever and attempt to bring it to its knees. Until then, share the show, rate the show, subscribe to the show, send me questions at historyofeurope@gmail. Until next time, pozdravljanje, ciao, and goodbye. The early history of each member of the Confederation and of the Confederation itself shows that they always defaulted to belonging to the Empire, trying to become immediately dependent on the Emperor in order to prevent oppression by middle lords and to enjoy practical liberty. The Empire itself had now become very much a shadow of its former self. Cities and princes were gradually asserting their own independence, sometimes breaking away from it altogether. The classical image of the HRE was beginning to coalesce, and the Confederacy would be the first in line to use that opportunity to assert their independence.